It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And with that, I do, of course, want to remind you, go to the website harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and. I mention that each and every week. harvellandcollins.com. Or you can, as I keep reminding you, give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050. That's 726-9050. And with that, a quick introduction. Good afternoon to you, Cecil.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. I'm glad to be here. Wes is in trial this morning, so I'm glad to be here with you this afternoon.
Well, thank you.
Lockwood, yesterday, you know, every week we come up with a new topic, and it's never a real struggle to come up with a topic to talk to you in the afternoon about once a week. But then sometimes, you know, like life in general, you know, something will come forward and just kind of will shock you right into the right place. And yesterday, this gentleman comes in. He had made an appointment, and he came back, and we talked, and I got all of the family facts, the pieces of his life puzzle in terms of marriage and children, things of that nature. And then just out of the gate, he says, "Now, Cecil is a trust. Mm-hmm. What is a trust?" And I kind of am taken back by such a simple and yet such a wonderful and profound question. And so I thought, well, that's the perfect topic for me tomorrow on the radio to discuss what is a trust. And so, Lockwood, let's do that, okay?
I agree with
Lockwood,
you fully.
Lockwood, a trust is basically a contract. It is an agreement. It is an agreement between three parties. There are three persons, if you will. It can be a company, of course, corporation, but there are three parties to a contract. There's the creator of the trust, and there is the trustee who would hold the property in the trust, be it real property or be it liquid assets, stocks, bonds, whatever it happens to be, the trustee who holds the property pursuant to the terms of the contract for the benefit of the beneficiary. So there's the creator, there is the trustee, and there is the beneficiary. And all of these terms and conditions, powers, if you will, are reduced to writing in a contract by and between the creator of the trust and the trustee, and it is then signed by the creator of the trust and the trustee. It is given some sort of legal consideration, maybe even just $10, but some sort of consideration, which any contract needs, a kind of a quid pro quo, and then there we are. We now have a trust, and it is basically, as I've said, a contract or an agreement between the creator and the trustee to hold property for the benefit of another. So the trust can be freestanding. What I mean by that, Lockwood, is that it exists as a contract. Here it is, you know, 10, 15, 20 pages of paper, all setting forth the agreement, and then a will can pour over assets into that trust. People can go ahead and fund the trust with assets and start the clock, if you will, on the trustee managing the assets for the benefit of the beneficiary, or it can just sit and wait until such time as it's needed, and then funded through a will, as I just mentioned, or just in general at some point, you know, in the future. So the fundamental answer to what is a trust is it is an agreement. It is a contract. Now, the next question that any person would have is, well, what are the most common purposes of a trust? Mm-hmm. And I like this question a lot, Lockwood, because yes, I am a trust lawyer. I've been doing trust work now for you know, 25 years. But even I do not enjoy or recommend creating a trust when it doesn't have a very strong purpose. You've heard me before, Lockwood, say this, that I really, as a trust lawyer, want to find something that we can hang our hat on mm-hmm. as to why the client needs a trust. And interestingly, here very recently, some folks came in, this was last week, I believe, to talk about a trust. They thought they wanted a trust. And I thought that we would land with a significant reason to have one, because the information they had given the staff to get the appointment was that we're there to set up a trust, and we need a trust, and we desire a trust. Well, come to find out, Lockwood, there wasn't any reason to have a trust for these good people. There was nothing that I really could legitimately hang my hat on to suggest the preparation of a trust agreement, the preparation of that contract. As we went through all of the facts of their life, there just simply was no overriding reason to have a trust. And for instance, Lockwood, to be more specific, these folks are married. Mm-hmm. They're in a first marriage. There's been no other marriages. They have adult children. They don't have minor children. They have adult children that they're going to leave their assets to 50-50. Mm-hmm. And the adult children are just fine. They're not they're not special needs.
Right.
They're not any limitations with these two adult children. And so there's no need for a trust for a minor. There's no need for a holdback trust for special needs. And the list just kind of goes on and on as to why these folks did not particularly need a trust. Now, Lockwood, let's talk about some of the purposes of a trust, some of the ones that we create mm-hmm. on an everyday basis. One of the ones, of course, that would not apply to these clients but does apply sometimes is second marriages or third marriages, where folks have assets and they want to suspend those assets in a trust for the benefit of their new wife, if you will, or new husband or second husband, second wife. But upon the death of their second spouse or third spouse, they want those assets to go back to their children from their prior marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So you see now where if someone sets forth those facts, the only solution is the use of a spouse's trust, whereby the assets of the husband or wife pass to the spouse, but are suspended per this agreement, I keep calling it agreement or contract, for the trustee to take the assets and use them for the benefit of the surviving wife and or husband. But then the agreement proceeds to say that upon the death of the spouse, those assets would go back to the children of the creator of the trust from a prior marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, Lockwood, there you see a very significant reason to have a trust agreement, don't you?
Right. And it also eliminates a lot of questions, both on behalf of the surviving spouse, but also the children as well. It already, if you will, I'm gathering from this, it predetermines a plan. It is a planned structure, in other words.
That's correct. We had a file just very recently where the home place was the husband's home place. He did remarry after the death of his wife. He has three daughters. And the wife now is, of course, living in the home,
mm-hmm.
and he wants to continue to allow that.
Right.
But that after she were to die, the home would be sold and would go back to his three children.
Right.
He also wanted some of his funds, some of his liquidity, to go into this trust for the benefit of his second wife, and be used for her benefit during her widowhood, if those are the facts that mm-hmm. develop, and then, of course, back to his children. So you see this, a very strong reason to go into the detail of setting up a trust for those kinds of people. Now, those kinds of facts. Another trust that is talked about frequently, Lockwood, is the trust that, you know, well, I want my children to have benefit to my estate. I have two children. I want both of them to share in the estate 50-50. But if they go through a divorce, Cecil, my adult child, my 40-year-old, my 35-year-old, or my 25-year-old, whatever my adult child happens to be, I want these assets to stay in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not want them to become marital assets that the wife and or husband, who is the other party to the divorce, can create issues for my child, claim that it's marital property,
right,
and end up taking these assets from the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would be the trust, if you will, for a benefit of an adult child, to protect those assets from the twists and turns of life. And one of the big twists and turns in so many people's lives, unfortunately, is a divorce. And so there is a trust, there is a contract that we can create, Lockwood, that would protect those assets and lock those assets down for the benefit of the lineal line, the children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, and not allow them to get outside of the lineal line over to the in-laws in the family. And that is something that you can imagine that those facts are put before us fairly routinely.
Right. A very interesting thought on that, because you have assets that have been acquired through, family activities for many generations, and the desire is to keep that generation line going, and having it break up in a variety of disputes creates, I can imagine, a nightmare just for estate matters and other activities as well. So, okay, that's an interesting concept.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I just want to say very quickly, we have young people who come in our office, had a really sweet situation that's on my mind right now, where this father came in with a little 3-year-old rattling around his feet while we were doing our work. His wife was working as a nurse at the hospital and was taking over a shift for someone else and wasn't able to come in. You know, these people probably, I don't know, maybe 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so there now, clearly, we have a trust for minor children. So that's a pretty common one. Most of our listeners have heard about that kind of trust versus some of these others that we're discussing. Now, Lockwood, there's the trust for special needs,
mm-hmm,
called a special needs trust. This is a trust where we have a child that is receiving government benefits because of their handicap.
Right.
Many times these special needs have been in existence, these special circumstances have been existing for the entire life of the child. The mother and the father have been caring for the child. You know, sometimes the child is more functional and working actually in the community with some sort of job that will fit their needs. But the bottom line is that they are receiving disability and or government benefit as a result of their special needs, and the parent does not want their inheritance to create circumstances where the child would no longer receive those benefits.
Right.
So if the funds are segregated and put in a contract known as the special needs trust, whereby they are only used for very particular purposes, then the child will not lose their benefit. And yet there would be funds set aside in this trust with the trustee to provide for those special kinds of things that anyone would need in order to live a comfortable life. So that's known as a special needs trust.
You know, we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, just to remind you of that. And don't hesitate to give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. And online at harvellandcollins.com. We're talking about trusts and, of course, the development of a trust. You've said at the outset of the program, Cecil, that it's an agreement. is a contract. And I want to get to a quick question on that in a moment. But it's also, in my observations, based on what you've just been talking about, it's a plan. It's a long-range plan that is sort of in addition, obviously, to a will that you do a lot of work with. But it's a plan that sort of details for all of the beneficiaries exactly what to expect in any number of circumstances. That's that. To me, this is a long-range plan concept. Am I thinking correctly in that regard?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The pieces of the puzzle of the life of the client, which I listen to very carefully, I assimilate all of those facts. How long have the folks been married? How many children do they have? Are their children from a prior marriage? Are any of the children, are they disabled in any way? And sometimes the word disabled can mean just that the child, bless their souls, Lockwood, has had a drug addiction problem, or is struggling with alcoholism. Any number of things can create a circumstance whereby the parent is very concerned about leaving the estate to a child that has been suffering significantly with alcoholism, which we know is a disease, or drug addiction. So we listen to these facts, and then we mold the document, the contract, to assist this family in their goal setting long term, as you say. Absolutely.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell & Collins, of course, about the issue of trust. And, of course, I want to remind you, the number to call if you should have any interest in this conversation or others, 252 area code 726-9050. And, of course, their website at harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, we're talking about the issue of trust, and you bring up a very interesting aspect of this. And I'm very fascinated by the aspect of, you know, you mentioned the impact of substance abuse and events where families now all of a sudden are determining, well, we can't give all of our money to the child all at one swell swoop, as they say, but they've got to dole it out over a period of time. So you can develop a trust for that matter as well, can you not?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Lockwood. And we do a lot of that, much of that. And just a slight twist on the facts is that maybe you mentioned substance abuse, and yes, that is a very common factor that I hear and something that we work around by using a trust agreement. But it might also be that it's not necessarily substance abuse, but it's just spending abuse, which is known as the famous spendthrift trust. So we have parents who are very concerned that their child will muddle through the money very, very quickly. Sometimes this is in larger files where the child is going to receive, even though they're an adult child, they're 40 years old, they're 45 years old, but they're going to receive a large inheritance, and there's not, thank God, a substance abuse problem, but there's a spending problem.
Right.
And the parents want to put some restrictions on, as you use the word, doling this money out over time, how much money for what purpose, for what kinds of principal distributions, et cetera, et cetera. So you're absolutely right. I think what we kind of are beginning to see this afternoon, Lockwood, in our great discussion, is that, you know, life has got all of these permutations of personality and circumstances and a trust agreement. Isn't it interesting? Of all things, a contract, a legal contract, can help to mitigate some of these circumstances. Maybe it is the second marriage with the children from the prior marriage. Maybe it's the substance abuse issue. Maybe it's the special needs issue. Maybe it's the spendthrift issue. But we're beginning to see that the trust agreement is many times the tool in the toolbox that a good lawyer is able to use to hedge against, mitigate some of these things that we all are confronted with many times in our life. Now, I'm not done, Lockwood. I have a few more trusts that we see often. Right. And as we've discussed on this program, one of the ones that Harvell and Collins is very busy doing each and every week is asset protection trust, where the assets are protected from the devastating consequences of a long-term care, skilled care stay in a nursing home, the dirty word being nursing home. But the bottom line, Lockwood, is that those costs now are $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month. And a lot of folks just simply cannot afford that.
Right.
And they would see in the last few years of their good life all of their assets depleted at $10,000 a month, $120,000 a year. And so they come to talk to our law firm and to lawyers in the law firm about, well, what can we do to hedge against this? What are some of the protective trusts that you can create that can assist us in not seeing all of our assets depleted by skilled care? And so that kind of trust, or the purpose of that trust, Lockwood, is known as an asset protection trust. That's a very common, those are very common factual circumstances that we hear.
But in that particular case, a long-term asset trust, or pardon me, an asset protection trust, is do you have issues where the trust must be completed in a period of time, for example, if you will, to avoid look-back, things of this nature?
Well, there does exist in that body of law a 60-month or 5-year look-back period. But if the trust is properly structured, then we are able to avoid the 5-year look-back period or the sanction period. But it does require some special expertise, and the trust must be structured in a particular way. And so that's the answer to that question.
I think that's an important question, and I say that for the benefit of the audience. If you're thinking about this, and quite frankly, as Cecil, you and I both acknowledge, eventually everyone is going to need long-term care, presuming that we're going to live for a long time. But this is the sort of thing that justifies a call to Harvell and Collins, 252 area code 726-9050. You've heard, a key element in this conversation. All right, we've got asset protection trusts. We've talked about spendthrift trust, special needs trust, and, of course, a minor child, trust for a minor child. And then you've got protecting
the spouse's trust.
Spousal
trust. For those spouses that are in a second marriage or third marriage but desire their assets to go back to their children from their first marriage, potentially. That's known as the spouse's trust. And, yes, you have then the trust. Don't forget, Lockwood, we discussed also a trust that protects the children's inheritance from the in-law situation, a divorce, from a dissolution of that marriage, the client being very concerned that their assets stay within the lineal line, the child, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, and not necessarily get out of that line and over to the in-laws.
Right.
Now, there are lots of, as I talk with you, Lockwood, this afternoon, there are lots of factors that play into these decisions, like the one that I just mentioned about wanting to protect the inheritance from, keeping it in the lineal line. These are usually files, quite frankly, Lockwood, where the estate is a large estate.
Right.
Okay. And the children are going to inherit a significant inheritance. Okay. And there's more than enough income just off of the trust assets in and of themselves to provide for the child without feeding all of those, and I'm going to use the phrase, millions of dollars, over to the son or daughter, so that if for some reason they get a divorce, then those assets become, for whatever reason, marital property. The trust for the child in these files maintains the separateness of the inheritance, sets it aside as an inheritance, and keeps it tight with a wrapping, if you will, so that it cannot accidentally become marital property.
Right.
But those are files that usually involve some considerable net worth, whatever that might be, Lockwood. You know, we lawyers don't judge things, do we?
No. Well, you know, but this goes back to, okay, the comparison, and then I'm focusing here for a moment on the issue of the asset protection trust. You're dealing with people who may not have those millions of dollars.
Exactly. I'm so glad you were just right where I was going to say. And on the other hand, on the other side of the coin, an asset protection trust, many times it's for clients that have their wonderful home that they have struggled and worked their entire life to pay for. It now is free and clear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their own. That's their most significant asset, Lockwood, is their home. And they absolutely do not want to lose it to the devastating financial consequences of a long-term stay in a nursing home at $10,000 a month.
Right.
And so what can we do, you know, Cecil, to place this home in an asset protection trust, so that at least our children will inherit that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you pointed that out beautifully, Lockwood. Thank you.
Well,
the facts in that file are very different than the facts in the file where the parents are concerned about keeping their net worth within the lineal line.
You know, if the one thing I have to say of all of these trusts we've been talking about, and of course we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and I do want to remind you, 252 area code 726-9050, a simple phone call. You know, this issue of the asset protection trust, Cecil, to me is something that applies to everybody who's listening to this program. And you said something that was very compelling. You said, because I knew a little something about the asset protection trust and the fact that you have these look back issues from the Department of Social Service, well, Social Security, whatever the various agencies involved. But you just pointed out, if you tailor this product, if you create the product in the proper fashion, you can avoid some of these pitfalls and some of these problems. And I think that's an important statement to be made to the audience. You know, this is not something you just do casually. It does require technical expertise. I apologize, but I think that's an important issue, Cecil.
It is. Lockwood, I don't know how much time we have. I know we did have that little interruption, but just last but not least, sometimes also one of the largest assets in an estate can be an IRA or a 401k, in other words, a tax-deferred asset. And what I so many times hear from clients with regard to an IRA, and keep in mind now we're in the tax field now where we're having to dance around the tax issues, but that they do not want this asset to just simply pay out immediately to, say, for instance, a grandchild that's 15 years old. And so we have to generate a trust that will not trigger the recapture of the income tax, but yet will suspend this IRA over a period of time for the education of the minor grandchildren or even for an adult child. If it's a larger IRA, parents sometimes are concerned that they do not want the child to receive all of the IRA in one lump sum, and they would like for it to be distributed out over time. Well, that's a good objective, and it sounds good, but it has tax issues that we have to address in the trust document.
Okay. Well, again, the purpose of visiting with Harvell and Collins 252, area code 726-9050 is the phone number. I've got a few quick questions for you, Cecil, before we wrap things up. I first want to go to the topic of the trust needing consideration. Well, before I even get into that, let's talk about the selection of the trustee. How is that done?
Well, the client who is creating the trust has to think very seriously about who would be the the appropriate person to handle the assets and to provide the income and or principal out to the beneficiaries as directed.
Okay.
Is this one of the, sometimes in our office we call it the perfect child.
Uh-huh.
Do we have a perfect child?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a combination of perfect children? I want to hasten to say, Lockwood, many people use co-trustees so that they have more than one person to shoulder this responsibility. If we don't have a child and or children, then maybe we have a brother or a sister. Sometimes folks will even go so far as a very close and connected family friend. But you are absolutely correct. We're going to have to find that one of those three people, three parties, the grantor, the creator of the trust, the trustee, and the beneficiary. We certainly know the creator, don't we?
Right.
And we probably know the beneficiary, don't we?
Yeah.
The trustee is someone that's going to have to be selected and have to be named in the document. And we're going to need contingencies.
Good point. In other words, if the initial trustee, am I correct? Is that the right term? The individual.
That's right.
If they die or move away and are unable to provide the services, we need to have someone who will be able to step in. All right. The other question I have for you, you mentioned at the opening the fact that there needs to be consideration, and meaning in the form of a payment. To whom and for what purpose?
Because of the nature of this being a contract,
uh-huh.
There has to be consideration.
Oh.
And consideration, you know, Lockwood, is a word that we lawyers use, and it's absolutely accurate. But we all know that sometimes it's just a dollar in hand
right.
paid.
Right.
You see that in these
okay.
in these agreements at times. I, the grantor, hereby give the trustee a dollar in hand paid. The point there is just simply that there is a exchange, if you will, of something whereby the agreement itself now has a quid pro quo.
Got you.
I'm asking you to be my trustee.
Okay.
In exchange for that, I'm giving you $10
right.
to agree to do that.
Okay. So that basically just confirms the agreement, the gift, I mean, the provision of it and the reception of it guarantees that both parties are aware of the circumstances. I see the issue there. We're talking with Cecil Harvell. We're talking about trusts. You know, as we wrap it up with you, Cecil, I want to go back to the comment that you initiated at the opening, that you do not necessarily rush to create trusts. You said you had a couple that came in with expectations of needing a trust, and after a conversation, you decided it was totally unnecessary. But as you've just pointed out, and you've said this many times before, you only create a trust if there's reason for it, justification for it. It's not a matter of just going through the motions. I think it's an important issue, and again, we'll close with this comment. Don't hesitate, and particularly as we've just talked about several major issues, do not hesitate to give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, thank you very much. A great program. Appreciate your time today.
I enjoyed it, Lockwood. You take care.
Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station.